Welcome to Musicians Versus the World, the podcast where we explore aspects of music and musician life that may not have been covered in music school. I am your host, Christine Smith. Have you ever stopped to think about what makes music funny and what makes a good action score? And what can a composer do that completely sucks the life out of their composition? In today's episode, we're talking to composer Matt Novak. We discuss all of this and really dive deep into the details. So if you want to learn about how to compose this type of music, this is the episode for you. Matt Novak is a classically trained composer and percussionist whose intuitively smart scores have created indelible moments in mostly comedy projects across series and film. Matt's music supports performances by many of today's greatest comedic actors, including Amy Poehler, Paul Rudd, Rob Corddry, Megan Mullally, Henry Winkler, and Will Arnett. Some of his notable credits include working cult favorite Children's Hospital, Netflix A Murderville, as well as award-winning Dog Days and spots for Assassin's Creed Valhalla. His most recent work can be heard on TBS's Miracle Worker End Times. So Matt Novak, thanks so much for being here and welcome to Musicians Versus the World.
Thanks, Christina. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk with you. I love your work. I think it's so fun and it's innovative, and I love how it brings so much comedic aspects to the work that you do, and I can't wait to kind of pick your brain on how you do all of that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So now you are a classically trained composer and drummer percussionist. So how did you end up from there to working on End of Times or Miracle Workers?
Gotcha. So my entire...
Let's just start from the beginning.
18-year career journey. Growing up, I always loved listening to film scores, film soundtracks. Then in heavy metal. While other kids were blasting rock, I was blasting film scores in the car. So I always knew that's what I wanted to do. I was a percussionist. I went to school for percussion performance and composition, secondary.
Wait, both?
I did both. I was went to school for percussion and then did a minor in composition.
Wow.
And then I pivoted fully to composition, and that's when I got my undergrad degree in music composition.
Okay, because I was thinking that those percussionist performance majors were probably some of the busiest musicians in the music department.
Yeah, pretty busy. I was always good with keyboard instruments like marimba, xylophone, vibes. Mm-hmm. That helped. Eventually pivoted to full-time composition, and then graduated that. Went to grad school at USC, did their scoring for motion pictures and television program. And they gave me my first job working as an assistant for a composer named Steven Stern. So that got me my start. I worked as an assistant for another composer named Craig Wedren, who recommended me to Children's Hospital, which became my breakout role. And that started my career. I worked for the same producers a lot. Miracle Workers I got because one of those producers, David Wayne, recommended me for that show. Mm-hmm.
I love how you always knew that you loved film scores, and then you just kind of took that and went with it. And did you always have that goal in mind, or when you were doing performance or when you were doing classical study, did you think, oh, maybe I want to do art music instead? Or did you always know it was going to be film music?
I think I always knew that I wanted to do film music, and always seemed to gravitate towards composers who had a very cinematic style. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of Michael Dougherty mm-hmm. when I was in college, still am. His pieces always seemed very cinematic. Mm-hmm. You could see the picture in your head when you listened to this music. When I was composing, I would always try to picture images in my head when I would try to score some imaginary film in my head when I was writing in college. My first composition teacher, Rob Diemer, was an alumni of the USC film scoring program. So he was the one who told me about it. He was obviously very supportive. And then my other professors were very supportive too.
That's great. I love it that they supported what your goals were instead of trying to fit you into what their idea of success was.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's really great. That's really great. You said that your experience with the marimba and the xylophone help you with your composing now. But what about the other things? Do you feel like when you're composing that you come at it from more of a rhythmic standpoint when you see a scene, or do you stick with the melodic structure? How do you usually come about with things?
Yeah, it depends on the scene. I like to try, at least my first thing I do is I'll watch a scene over and over again. I'll get it in my head, kind of memorize it. And I'll just kind of figure out what was the key things that the scene needs. If it's a rhythm, if it's a pulse, if it's a melody, if it's a type of chord progression, type of scale. I'll do that first. And so, yeah, I do use, when I write action cues, I do use a lot of rhythm, a lot of percussion, ostinatos, rhythmic patterns. But yeah, it just depends.
Isn't that fun, though? I think that's one of the great things about film music is that it gives you some freedom and you write for so many different types of scenes that you can really just experiment with things.
Yeah, exactly. There are certain styles I like to write in, but I don't like to just stick to one. I like to try to stretch my wings and try different styles, different genres, and not repeat myself. I'll do a score and then look back on it and just think about what worked, think about what I could have done differently, and just kind of take that with me into the next score.
Gotcha.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it sure does. So what is your favorite genre to write in?
I love writing action music. My first kind of writing gig with the music library was trailer music.
Okay.
I do big, epic trailer albums. Haven't done that in a while. I'm actually getting back into it a little bit, I think. But that was like just big orchestra, big pounding percussion, you know, aggressive synths. And that's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. A lot of work. It can be exhausting. Sometimes when I write action cues, like for Harley, I remember there's some for Harley Quinn where I worked on an action cue for a couple of days and I was just flat out exhausted afterwards.
Really?
Just because I just really get into it and I just, so probably okay, for my own health, I should probably stay away from action cues, but I do love writing them.
It's just moderation. What is it that makes it so exhausting?
I think I just get into it. I just like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I grew up with heavy metal. I just kind of like really just get into it. And I'll just keep going and just not. The downside is that I'll just get so focused that I just won't take breaks.
I see.
So I'll just be into it for hours at a time and just, I'll be done. I'm just like, oh, geez, I gotta sleep for her. A day and a half, you know, just.
All right. So then what makes a really, really good action cue when you're finished with it and you say, oh, that was a good one. What are some aspects that, ooh, that was good?
That's a good question. Very good question. I don't know if I've ever thought about that. I would say a good hook, okay. Whether it's like a cool ostinato. You know, I usually save big themes for heroic moments or the inverse of that. So like very like this moment of despair, you know. But it would be like good ostinatos, like hooky, memorable ostinatos. I like pounding percussion, pounding drums, you know, being a percussionist. I think the simple answer is energy. You know, what makes a good action cue is energy. If an action scene is more like intimate, if it's more personal, it actually might be better with like a simple piece of music or sometimes even no music. If it's just, it can get more raw and have more despair to the action scene without music or without a very minimal music. So it kind of also just depends on what emotion you want the audience to feel during the action scene. But if it's a big heroic action scene, just make it big and epic. Yeah, it's fine.
I like it. I like it. Another genre that you do a lot of is comedy. I look at your the amount of projects that you've done, and so many of them are comedic. And I think for everything, for writing, acting, music, comedy, and being funny is probably the most difficult, in my opinion. How do you do that? What makes music funny?
I don't know if there's anything really difficult about writing music for comedy. Mm. It's just having a sense of the comedy itself, just being aware of where the jokes are, where the comedy lies, so that you're enhancing it and not distracting it. I do a lot of absurdist comedies. That's like kind of 95% of the type of comedy I do, like Children's Hospital, Miracle Workers. Miracle Workers also had a little bit of a sitcom vibe to it too. But absurdist, the comedy comes from the characters being, or the actors portraying the characters as if these absurd situations are really happening to the characters. So that's like, it's not funny to the characters. Mm-hmm. So the score needs to play that reality of the characters. So a lot of absurd comedies, I'll score it straight. Like I would score it like a drama, or, Children's Hospital is a medical drama. So it does a lot of medical type cues in it. And that comedy comes from everyone playing these silly things realistically and reacting to them realistically. But I still need to pay attention to the comedy, not stepping on any jokes, not being too dramatic or mm-hmm. too scary, or, I guess the trick is there's a fine line. I might overwrite a little bit.
That's what I was wondering, yeah.
Yeah, and then pull things back, as I kind of find that balance. Also, I will carve out space for jokes. So it's if there's a funny line or funny punchline, I will just stop the cue right before that line. I like to use negative space in that way. Avoid doing anything that's too dingy. The thing you don't want to do is to put a bell, a ding, ding, this is a joke. And you don't want to do that.
Okay.
That'll make it less funny, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I like to use negative space. So it's if there's, a heartfelt cue, I will make sure that it wraps up before the joke, or even wraps up prematurely to kind of emphasize that joke that way. Yeah, just being aware of where the comedy lies. And I think a lot of that also comes from just experience, from doing it a lot and collaborating with great comedy minds.
Gotcha. And you were talking about sitcoms. It's different.
Oh, yeah. I would say sitcoms are a little different in that those are more about setting a tone. In sitcoms, you'll see transition pieces of music carries the audience from one scene to the next. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that a sitcom cue plays through a scene. Like in absurdist comedies, it's scored like a drama. So there'll be a cue throughout a scene with lots of dialogue. Sitcoms typically don't do that. It's more about setting a tone. And with Miracle Workers, we did want to give it a little bit of a sitcom vibe. It's interesting, thinking about Miracle Workers and also Children's Hospital, I think about as both shows each having two different scores. Like there's the core score of the show itself. Children's Hospital is a medical drama. And then in Miracle Workers, it was a sitcom-y kind of 80s Mad Max vibe. There's a lot of establishing cues where we just set up the tone, leave it open-ended in a unresolved cadence, or mm-hmm. even no cadence at all, because it's still in the middle of a story. Mm-hmm. And it saves the resolution for the end of the episode, which is kind of fascinating.
Okay. Why is it kind of fascinating?
I always kind of feel a little embarrassed that I didn't know this before, because it's not something that ever came up in college. And when I worked for other composers, a sitcom cue was a cue that was short. It was just an establishing scene, a transition cue, or okay. And then we're talking about like unresolved cues. Like, how do you know when to resolve? And the advice I was given by someone was that, I'll start unresolved. If it feels okay, I'll leave it that way. But if it feels like it needs resolve, I'll do it then. Okay, that kind of makes sense. But this is where the embarrassing part comes from. When I was working on Miracle Workers, we had a lot of time beginning to kind of play around with ideas with the score and try to figure out what the score did. And one of the ideas that the showrunners threw out is like, hey, let's maybe try 90s sitcom score. Like, okay, that's interesting because I don't know. And it dawned on me that I don't think I've ever like really studied 90s sitcoms from a like critical analysis of what the scores do.
Okay.
So like, okay, well, I'll pull up some Family Matters, some Full House, and just see what they do. And I was shocked and realized at least the episode of Full House I watched had no score at all. It was completely dry except for a montage, which was a song that was licensed. But Family Matters had like a traditional sitcom score. And it sounds so silly for me to say this, but I'm going to be honest. I'm going to lay my heart bare. It blew my mind when I was watching this episode. I can't remember what the episode was. And it's like, oh my God, all these cues are unresolved. None of these cues are resolving itself. Like, how's this work? And then at the very end of the episode, the very last cue of the episode, that's the one that resolved.
And makes sense.
Because they wrapped up, because the whole time the story is still happening.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to tell the audience that the story is done. And it's like, I feel so silly saying this because it's something I should have known, but it's like, I just never made the conscious effort to like study a sitcom from a score standpoint. And it was like an epiphany. It was like a very silly epiphany I had. Like, oh yeah. And now I'm watching, I noticed a lot too. I've been going through rewatching Star Trek, The Next Generation. So many of those cues are unresolved. And I'm just like, oh yeah, that's just how it works. And then I look back at my own music and how many cues I ended resolved that I probably could have just left unresolved. I probably should have. but you know, I probably so many of your listeners are like, yeah, Matt. Yeah, we all know this.
I don't know. Maybe now maybe their minds are being blown and they're like, oh my goodness.
Hey, like this blew my mind. Maybe if it blew at least one other person's mind, be saying this.
Well, I'm going to be going and watching some more episodic shows to see which ones are unresolved and which ones aren't. That's like my weekend. I've got it planned out now. So
There you go. And you know, I think back to in college, you know, especially USC, which I loved. I loved going, doing that program. And sometimes people ask me like, well, what do you wish you would have learned from that? And I've said in the past, like, you know, they're really great at talking about scoring scenes and writing themes and different techniques, really great at getting you started. But I would have loved to discuss like strategies of how to plan out like a full score, like a full feature film score, a full score of TV. And I guess that just comes from just watching a lot of films and watching a lot of TV. But like, that's something I wish I kind of, and I still love to learn. I still love to learn new things and have my mind blown from silly little things that I should have known years ago. But,
So you're talking about like the overarching structure of an entire score over the course of like a 2-hour movie.
I think it's probably something that comes just with experience and everyone just kind of has their own strategies. I feel like I change my strategy every time. It's just kind of what I feel like doing. But it's nice to learn from other composers and figure out what other composers do. But I think it also is still kind of personal. A personal feeling of how you feel about a particular project, film, or show, or whatever.
I think it depends also on the relationship you have with the showrunner or the director, because that's them putting a lot of trust in you. If you're like, hey, I have this theme, I want to develop it as the character develops, what do you think? And they're like, ah, no, stick with the temp track. Just, you know, like it can be, that can be a little bit tricky navigating that as well, I think.
Yeah, it can be a little tricky. Also, I think I see it as a challenge and mm-hmm. just like try to figure out if director, producer really loves the temp, try to figure out what about the temp that they like, and then figure out how to work my theme, my ideas in with those. But yeah, trying to figure out, instead of just like blatantly copying the temp or knocking off the temp, which is good for doing parodies, you have to do that, but try to weave aspects of the temp into what you're already doing or what you want to do, mm-hmm. Which is a challenge, but can be a fun challenge sometimes. Can be a fun puzzle.
Mm-hmm. When you're finding these other temp tracks, are you keeping it within the same sort of vein or same feeling as the ones that the production team gives you, and you're just...
Yeah, or like a tone. Okay. An overall tone. So it's, you know, like Miracle Workers, for example, at the beginning went through a few rounds of the score, like what the score would be like. Mm-hmm. So the first round was pretty much all my ideas after having a conversation with the showrunners to figure out what they wanted. And then kind of refine that. And then as we were refining it, one of the things was trying to figure out, okay, they wanted like an 80s VHS vibe, but what specifically kind of 80s VHS vibe? So I started researching more 80s scores, and then ultimately started studying scores by Giorgio Moroder and John Carpenter, which I jokingly started calling, I really hope this is not insulting, I don't mean it that way, but I started calling it dirty synth. Uh-huh. So like things with a lot of distortion and analog like grit to it and kind of like a tactile feel, more of a tactile feel to it than like, you know, the clean type of synths. Once we figured that out, that's when it really clicked with all of us. So I kept those scores open, you know, to reference whenever I needed to.
So now, did you use analog synth machines or did you manipulate things that were digital?
On my end, it was all digital. I wish I had room for my home studio. It does not have the room for
analog
machines. They're huge. They're huge. Someday, I would love to get a collection going. The composer who worked with me, Greg Martin, he started as my go-to guitarist. He's a good composer himself. He did some work on it. He had a small analog box that he liked to play with. He also recorded some percussion, too, that we used. On my end, it was all soft synths, which then I would like, if it was, we used samples of the Triton and the Juno. So at least they were samples of old 80s synths. And if I need a new sound and I used a more of a modern synth, like I used Dune 3 a lot and Diva, I would make sure to dirty them up. If they're a stereo synth, made sure to change it to mono. And then add reverb or delay to kind of widen it back up. Used a lot of tape distortion. What was the plugin called? RC90, I'm going to say. There's even a preset called 80s VHS.
Well, that's really interesting that you're able to do that. And so you took that, you took this 80s VHS vibe, and you kept a lot of cues unresolved throughout the scenes. And did you score that pretty straight? I mean, or did you try to work up comedy there? Like, I don't know. It's not quite as absurdist as, I mean, I suppose it is, but how did you handle that?
So it was a bit of a mix, like I mentioned before, like the two different kinds of scores.
Yes.
In one project. We had a mandate, all of us to avoid pizzicato strings. Nothing takes away a comedy of a scene than music that's trying to be funny. So the trick was to, using synths, trying to find like a light, bouncy thing, like a fun...
Using light. Dirty synths to make things sound
Light. Yeah. Right. Light and dirty.
As you look over your career with all this comedy, and then, you know, you have some video games as well. Like you've done a huge variety of things. What is the project that you feel like you've learned the most from?
My first show, Children's Hospital. You know, that went for 7 seasons. And the same thing, each season I tried to do different things. But also in the later seasons, it became much more parody focused. Mm-hmm. Like the last 2 seasons, I feel like every episode, it was a different parody. So each time I was like, okay, we're parodying, this episode we're parodying Mission Impossible or the Fugitive or a documentary score. I had to kind of break down the temp, analyze it, figure out what makes those scores work, and then do my own version of it. And doing that, I think I learned more just doing that than anything.
I think that's a great way to learn. And I think you're right. That is how students learn, isn't it?
That's the way that sticks with me. Mm-hmm. The most, like lately I've been trying to dig into, what makes John Williams harmonies work. And it's like,
there you go.
not that I can even remotely claim that I could write like that, but like once I, you know, start kind of seeing his tricks, the things he tends to do, like, okay, I can start seeing how he comes to these results.
Yeah.
Because they're so complex. Mm-hmm. But there is also like, once you kind of dig it, there is some like, there's some simplicity to it. The complexity is in the result, but I can kind of see like how he mm-hmm. arrives at those results.
You're coming full circle back to the classical upbringing.
Exactly.
You can, that's awesome. It has been such a fun conversation with you. I have loved just picking your brain and seeing how you think about things and how you're learning. I love it that you're still learning and you still have that sense of wonder that I think is just awesome, that musicians need in their careers, for sure. So as we finish up, what advice do you have for aspiring musicians or aspiring composers?
Well, for composers, I always give the same piece of advice. I should probably think of something else someday. I highly recommend finding another composer to work for as an assistant. Like I mentioned before, I worked as a composer assistant for 2 different composers. And I just learned so much. I did learn a ton from going to school. USC was great at giving a foundation for film and TV scoring. And there are other programs like that too. Those are great. I do recommend those. But I think I learned even more working for a composer, seeing how they worked, getting experience in the industry. So I highly recommend that. For musicians, I would say, at least musicians that want to work on film and TV scores, mm-hmm. I give some of the similar advice. I would say, reach out to composers. Composers, we all have a roster of musicians that we can call up to hire, to record, even if it's just like a simple, like a solo recording. Just reach out and say, hey, I'm a musician looking for scoring work. If you ever need help with this particular instrument, let me know. Or, you know, ask them to coffee or something. Mm-hmm. That'd be my recommendation for musicians.
That's great. We have never gotten that advice from anyone yet. So I love that. So thank you.
You're welcome. I would even say, if you're in LA, New York, Nashville, find out who your orchestra contractors are. The people that are, the composers will hire them to put together an orchestra to work, to record a score. Another violinist friend of mine is my go-to contractor. His name's Mark Robertson in Los Angeles. That would be a good person to know for musicians to reach out to, figure out who the contractor. There's a few in LA, and I'm sure there's in Nashville and New York and others. I'm sure there are some mixing engineers do contracting work too. So yeah, that would be a good person to reach out to as well.
Okay.
If you're looking to, for getting work and scoring.
Great. Well, Matt, you are so much fun. Thank you so much for being here and chatting with me. It's just been such a pleasure talking with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Christine. It has been fun.
Thank you for joining us today on the Musicians vs. the World podcast in our conversation with composer Matt Novak. If you'd like to learn more about Matt and his work, I will have links to his website as well as links to Miracle Workers End Times in our show notes on our website, frostedlens.com/musicians-vs-the-world. Musicians vs. the World is a production of Frosted Lens Entertainment in conjunction with Smith Sound Music. It is hosted and edited by me, Christine Smith, and our producer today is Russ Wilkes. In this episode, you've heard excerpts from Better Than Heroes, I Like It Here, Sad Sid, The Enchanted Workshop, and Miracle Workers End Times main title. All work was composed by Matt Novak and shared here with permission. As you're listening to the music in this episode, pay special attention to I Like It Here, which plays about 25 minutes into the program. We didn't talk about it in this conversation, but this cue uses items found in a junkyard, and they uses it musically. Can you guess what those things are? If you have enjoyed today's podcast, please be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss out on any future conversations. You can also find a video version of this interview on our Musicians vs. the World YouTube channel. If you have any questions for us, topics you'd like to hear about, or any helpful advice for other musicians you'd like to share, be sure to reach out on Instagram, Twitter, Threads, or Facebook, or send us an email at info@frostedlens.com. As always, thanks so much for listening and have a great day.